cliffcentral.com. South African singer-songwriter, 3 studio albums. When I Wake Up, his follow-up Life on Mars, and his 2016 release Things Unseen have made him a platinum-selling success. After the widespread acclaim of his first album, Jesse's music has caught the attention of 3-time Grammy-winning Canadian producer David Bottrell. And in 2017, he was selected as an official artist at South by Southwest and performed several shows in Austin, Texas, as well as L.A. A collaboration with DJ duo Kentaphonic released I'll Follow You, was released this year. And in 2018, he released I've Been Looking, his first ever collaboration with his father. He also served as executive producer in his father's latest album, King of Time, which was released in April of 2018. From August, he spent a lot of his time in LA working on new music with prominent US producers. He came back to South Africa in October to tour with US pop star Daughtry as the main support on his arena tour. He's released 7 top 10 singles and has been nominated for 5 South African Music Awards. As an official ambassador for the Nelson Mandela 46664 Foundation, Jesse's been invited to play at Radio City Music Hall in New York for the annual Mandela Day concert. What a CV. Here he is.
Jeez, you read that whole thing, man.
It's only a little bit better than mine.
But dude, it's a good CV.
Oh, thanks,
you
man.
You must be quite chuffed with that.
Yeah, I've been around for a little while now, man.
You have. You're not this kid anymore.
Yeah.
Who people go, oh, you know, there's Johnny's son, and he's doing really well. You've achieved all this stuff on your own, which is very impressive.
Thank you, man.
How are things going?
Ah, you know, it's been a wild, difficult
year. It's been a shit year, dude. Come on.
Yeah, no, it's been tough.
How's the family? How's everybody?
Well, you know, there's good days and bad days right now. It's still very raw. It's funny, you know, like, there's things in your life that you think, if this ever happens, I don't know how I'll ever continue and how I'll ever go on. And then those things happen to you. And you learn a lot about yourself. You learn about your own limits. You know, you learn that you're actually stronger than you thought you were, and that, you know, you learn how important family is, and all those good relationships and those moments you have together become very precious, you know. So this year has definitely magnified those parts of my life for me in a very intense way. So yeah, I'm okay.
Well, I'm glad to hear it. I've got to say that you, your family, your dad, everything was handled so elegantly. That farewell concert, the fact that it was you guys kept a lot of this stuff out of the public eye. You were private. People respected that about you. I think your dad just left with such grace, you know.
Yeah, no,
he was beautiful. Obviously, when the news came, everybody was heartbroken, and I think the outpouring of love that South Africa had for him. I mean, you couldn't have been surprised because you knew people loved him, but it must have been quite supportive and must have given you some strength.
Yeah, initially it was hard when the news broke because, you know, you want to, it's not your own anymore, you know, you want to have it for yourself and for your family, you know, you just want that time, that private time to go through it. But I must say, you know, if I could just say thank you to people, you know, the amount of love and support and compassion we've had from actually just strangers, you know, like fans and just people around the world. I've had some amazing messages on social media, and also the media. You know, the media were incredibly respectful, which was surprising. You know, they were very
they're douchebags. I mean,
yeah. Well, you know, it was. I think
you were meant to come here on the morning of the news.
Yeah, I was. Yeah,
I remember because I saw Roddy Quinn that night, and he said, sorry about this morning. I said, sorry, what are you kidding? We'll do another show. Jesse will come in.
Yeah, it's weird, eh?
But you've got a lot of news going on personally anyway in terms of the music, so it's good to catch up and find out what you're up to.
Man. It's great to be back here, man.
How's the music industry as a whole at the moment? Still as tough as nails? Because that is not an easy place to be.
It is tough. I mean, I think that it's ever-changing, you know, technology and the way people consume music, and musicians have to become entrepreneurs almost.
Yeah,
you know?
and salespeople, and you have to be a hustler and a wheeler-dealer.
Yeah.
And you suddenly have to be able to do merchandising and stuff that before someone else handled.
Yeah, it's definitely you know, in back in the day, I think musicians were far more focused on just making music, which was an amazing luxury. You know, it's like I think modern day musicians look back at that time as like this very, it's like a holiday compared to now where we have to be tweeting and going to, you know, marketing
there's
events.
There's no time for sex, drugs, women, parties.
Sex, drugs, and rock and roll. There's literally no time. We're all just tweeting.
Everybody's busy.
It's a sad reality.
Running their side hustle and this going on. It's crazy, like how hard it's become.
I've actually, now I've started doing this thing where I'll take, you know, 20 minutes out of my day, every day, and I'll just sit with my guitar, and I'll turn my phone off, and I'll just play guitar, and just sing, and just enjoy my instrument, enjoy playing music just for myself and by myself with absolutely no pressure. It's almost like journaling, you know, you just play, and you just have fun with it, you know, because...
Jesse, that is your job.
Exactly. Mm. That is actually really the heart of what I do.
A lot of people might do, if that's their hobby, they might think, oh, what a luxury. But if you don't do that, we don't get good songs.
Yeah.
So you damn well make sure you do. Okay.
Keep at it.
It's so important, man. You know, I think musicians do everything except sit and make music, which is what we're meant to be doing. So, I've definitely...
But do you have a team of people? Because obviously, I mean, you're at the stage now where you're not this breakthrough artist that we hadn't heard much about before. And you've been around a while now.
Yeah.
People know you. You've got a track record. You've got all these awards and successes. You've collaborated with amazing people. So you really have... you know, substantial CV, and you can't be busy tweeting and figuring stuff out about, you know, which market you're going into next and plugging this gig and that gig.
Look, you do have, I'm in a position where I have support of my team, but there is still, I mean, you know, as an artist, you have to have a hand in all of it. You know, you can't just, you know, it's your brand ultimately is who you are. You know, and I hate the word brand. I don't like using that word for myself personally. But, you know, I have things that I believe in, that I stand for, and I have to you know, lead from the front.
Like, what do you get involved in and not? Because you've got to pick your battles. Social media can be toxic, and you might get pulled into stuff that you don't need to be pulled into. Mm. What do you choose? What are your big issues? What are the things that you do get involved in?
I mean, I do a lot of my own social media, you know. I mean, unless it's like... specifically promoting stuff, but you know, I certainly don't want to get involved in politics, for example.
Sure.
As an artist, that's not my
horrible
scene at all.
Horrible place to go.
Although I am very engaged in it, and I'm curious about it, and I enjoy reading about it, but I don't want to go there. I mean, if there's a cause that I believe in, I will totally jump on board. I mean, I was recently working with the Smile Foundation, and
they're great, huh?
Yeah.
Mark Lubner, and the work they do is just amazing. By the way, for anyone who doesn't know, a lot of kids born with cleft palates and hair lips and that kind of thing. And what Mark does is he's, and the Smile Foundation, which has got a number of really, really good donors and amazing people who spend a lot of time, doctors who donate their time. These kids come in, and they can't smile, they can't talk. And it's an easy operation to do, but it costs a bit of money.
Mm.
And a lot of these kids just don't have anywhere else to get the help. They might be from poor families. The parents might have abandoned them, because that happens some of the time.
Mm.
And then they come in, they have this operation, and their whole life gets better. They can smile, they can talk.
Yeah, I actually stood in on an operation.
Oh, wow.
They actually let me come into the operating room, and they...
You didn't pass out.
I was pretty close to
it. Oh, no.
It was pretty hectic. Yeah,
and watching kids being operated on is really hard.
It was pretty intense, but it's amazing, man. I mean, it's an incredible thing. And the other... just if I may, the other foundation that I'm working with, obviously, is the Click Foundation, which is which was basically the foundation around my dad's tribute song, The Crossing, which we did last year.
By the way, well done on that. That was a...
Yeah.
That
and
was
we've raised a million rand, you know, in the last 7-8 months. And it all goes to the Click Foundation, which is focused on literacy in young students, especially in the rural areas. You know, one of the biggest challenges in South Africa for students is, we're not even at education yet, just basic literacy is such a huge problem. And after a child reaches a certain age, if they're not literate by that point, the chances of them learning at a later stage in life just diminishes exponentially. So it's really important that they get access to that stuff as soon as possible. So yeah, that's
you know,
been
when
a...
you know, when you get serious about things, you sound a little bit like your dad.
Okay, well, I'll take that as a compliment.
It is a compliment.
Yeah.
I was thinking about the interest that he always had in anthropology. And you know, he gave these incredible lectures, and he was such a great storyteller too. Are you drawn in that direction at all? I mean, he would have told you these stories, and growing up, you would have heard plenty of them.
Absolutely.
Is that stuff that you're interested in?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that, you know, my sense of my dad in terms of what his first and true love was actually academia. You know, he was a lecturer at Wits for 10 years, and he lectured anthropology, and he loved it. It was a huge part of his life. So he passed that on to myself and my brother to an extent. You know, he really wanted us to have the university experience, you know. So when I matriculated, he said, you know, you can go and do music, but you have to go get a degree first.
Sounds like my dad. You can do whatever you want, but have to get a, I mean, I got the stupid law degree, never ever was going to use it.
So I did a BA law, and I majored in law, and
all of us losers end up doing law.
I majored in law and English literature, and then I did an honors in English literature. So
I never finished my law degree.
Yeah, I mean, I still have to do my articles and all that stuff. I mean, hopefully I never have.
Oh, please. It's never going to happen.
Yeah, never.
Oy.
So, yeah, I mean, you know, I really enjoyed academia, and especially English literature, you know, like just being able to read every week a new book and be exposed to some great stuff, man. Yeah. I remember, in fact, the last time we had a conversation, we just talked about, I think it was like Darwin or something for like an hour.
That's what I think is so interesting about you is you're multidimensional, and in many respects, a lot of the artists you meet are either they're in their music, and that's important. You have to be, you know, balls deep in your music, but you also have to be someone who has a real interest in other things. Otherwise, what are you singing about the whole time?
Yeah, I agree.
And what I like about musicians like you, for example, and you can hear it in the lyrics, and you can hear the inspirations come from different places, is that you're curious about other stuff.
Yeah, I think that is important.
Nothing worse than someone without anything else in their brain churning out really great melodies, but can't populate them with interesting
singing
thoughts.
Smelly cats.
What are they feeding you? It's a terrible thing. That's actually Leanne's hit
kittens
song.
Kittens and mittens and glee.
That's right. So tell me about what's going on now, because we decided to catch up with you, but you've actually got a couple of releases this year. On Friday, the 5th of July, you released a new song.
Yeah.
And you said, as a songwriter, I love quoting you, because you can respond to it. It's always horrible when someone quotes you. You feel that was pretentious. As a songwriter, I enjoy the challenge of experimenting with my sound. The vibe of this song was exciting to me because it combines my writing style with a really bold and unpredictable production.
Oh, God.
Did you even say that?
I'm at some point, sometime.
Did someone quote you?
I have no recollection. it's a new single that, you know, the timing was a bit strange because it was just before, you know, my father got really sick. So, and you know, so we went out of it, and then there was this kind of gap when things got hectic that we haven't been promoting it, you know.
Sure.
So now I'm back to kind of
and
talk
I mean,
about it a little
it's
bit.
It's really hard to promote some upbeat song while all
I know,
of this stuff's going on in your life.
It's just been a strange combination, but you know, in a way, it's good. You know, the song is about celebrating life and about, you know, overcoming your fears.
Sure.
Which is very relevant to me right now. And being completely present, you know. So the song is about sort of someone who's in a relationship and is saying to this other person that, you know, if you want to have a real relationship, you actually have to take a risk. You have to make yourself vulnerable.
Yes.
And you have to let come what may, you know.
Yep.
So the lyrics are, if you love it, let it burn.
Right.
You know, so you have to let that fire burn, because you're never going to really have a real connection with someone unless you are absolutely vulnerable and you're ready to take that risk and maybe get let down, you know.
Yeah.
So that's what the song
sounds
is
like
about.
Leanne's love life.
Yeah. So
fire and burning and
hell and fire and brimstone.
Yeah.
Ash and iron and stone. So what's going on? Have you got a stable relationship going on? What's been happening?
Yeah, I do, man. I've got a girlfriend of nearly 8 years now.
That's amazing.
So yeah, she's,
you keep that together. Teach me how.
I know. It's it's a good vibe, man. She's actually Canadian. And she's living here now.
It's okay. They're a province of America.
And I think...
don't tell her that.
Yeah, I think her parents are not happy that she's come from the most stable country in the world to one of the most complicated places in the world. But we have a great vibe, man. And it's been a great 8 years. She's really been incredibly supportive.
And she,
how did you meet her if she's from
Canada? Well, he's a musician. She heard his songs and fell in love. What's wrong with you?
I was recording my second album in Canada, and we met there. Yeah.
Did she just walk into the studio and go, "Oh my God, I'm in love with you"?
Kind of. Yes. It was a bit. Yeah, okay. I'll say yes.
It's your superpower.
All right. Yeah, that's how it was.
Does she ever just look at you with this dreamy look while you're playing your guitar and you're just jamming and comes in and goes, "Oh, I'm in love with the genius"?
I think at this point she's more like, "Go to the studio if you're going to make noise," you know?
Oh, no.
The romance is worn off.
Yeah.
That's terrible. Yeah. Are you one of those people who's focused on, like, traditional marriage and all of that stuff?
Not at all, man. I'm not a believer in any of that stuff, man.
My sister isn't either. She and her boyfriend have been together for, I think it's 9 years or whatever. And she's not in any hurry. When people ask her, she gets annoyed.
Yeah. I don't like some... I don't know.
Conventions.
Yeah. It's, you know, I think it is important at some point.
I think it's important if you're going to have kids.
Yeah. Which we will do, you know, at some point. But
that's a much more important decision.
Yeah.
Like, you make the decision you're going to have kids, then you organize the rest of the stuff.
Yeah.
Because then you're responsible for a whole other creature.
Yeah, exactly. No, then your life is not about you anymore.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Which is why you shouldn't have kids.
There we go.
Well, you're barren, aren't you?
Pretty much. I'm sure I am.
That's an uncomfortable laugh, but it's okay.
A
lifetime of never falling pregnant once? Are you kidding me?
And you've definitely tried.
Definitely.
Yeah.
There were many opportunities.
Well, Jesse, what's the composing part of things like at the moment? Because people say when you've gone through a major life experience like you have this year, that you find sometimes dark and light inspiration from deep places that you couldn't go to before. And we know that there are great musicians who've drawn on those as places of inspiration of some kind.
Mm.
And are you suddenly, is there a flourishing yet, or are you hoping it's still going to come of massive musical inspiration? Because I'm sensing there may be something.
Yeah, I think, like, you know, the first couple months of this year was very intense, and I was so close to the situation that it was very hard to reflect on it and to try and objectify it and analyze it and try and write about it. But now, you know, it's been nearly 2 months. It still feels very...
It's no time at all, man.
Yeah, it's still very raw, but I'm slowly starting to find my voice and my perspective on it. And I've been writing a lot, you know, just by myself, and not with any purpose in mind. Just to, you know, there's something very therapeutic about writing and getting those thoughts out. And it's been really it's like, you know, when you're in high school and you're listening to music and you get your rocks off on it, and it means so much to you. You know, it's just such amazing.
And you project yourself into every song.
Yeah, and your writing is like that as well. You know, it's such an intense, passionate experience. And I feel some of that again now. You know, just like, I really need it.
Yeah, it's your contribution to the world, but it's also your creative thing.
Yeah.
So it's your way of dealing and interacting.
And it has no connection to my career or my life as a musician or anything like that.
Even if you just did this privately, you would do it.
Yeah, and it really is nice. It's a wonderful thing to be able to express yourself through.
Can I ask you a favor? Can I send all the emails I get from people who want to be musicians to you?
Because
I
have no, you may not.
No, I'll tell you why. I have no idea how to answer those questions anymore, because I'm not in the music business. I'm not a musician. It's changed so much. People think because I did Idols that I somehow know what's going on. And that is not how it works.
Jeez,
what do you say? Because you must be approached all the time by people who go, "Jesse, tell me how I can start my own career, and how do I get going, and what do I need to do, and what do you think of my song?" Do they make you listen to their shit songs as well?
Look, I mean, I think even people who are in the industry are constantly guessing. You know, the industry is changing so much that even if you are in it every single day, there is still... I mean, from releasing a single 2 years ago to releasing a single now, I feel like it's almost like a completely different landscape, you know, and... all these online platforms and, you know, how do you break through all the noise? I mean, I think it's a harder time for new musicians now than it's maybe ever been in the history of music, just in terms of breaking through. So difficult. you know, I'm fortunate in that I kind of caught the last little wave of album sales and traditional music industry stuff when I entered the industry, and now that whole world is gone, you know. I mean, all the music stores, CD stores are going, and so, you know, I think that at the end of the day, no matter what's going on in the industry, no matter what social platforms, however people are consuming music, a great song will find its audience.
That is such a good thing to say, because it's so true.
Yeah. So I guess the only thing I can say that really hasn't changed and really never will change is just write good songs, you know, and perform your songs well. Like, just practice the craft of songwriting and the craft of live performance. That's, if you can do that, it'll carry you through, you know.
Oh, there we go. So I'm going to copy and paste that into everything from now on.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I want to play Let It Burn, and then we've got to catch up with George Meany. So we have Jesse here. We've been waiting for like a year and a half to actually get you in here and catch up. But you're
awesome.
Going back to America anytime soon? What's the plan?
Yeah, I'm going in October for a month to LA and New York, just doing writing sessions, just writing pretty much the whole month. And then I come back November and December, and I'm literally performing. I think I'm in a different city every week until January.
All right, well, what we'll do is once we have that calendar, then we'll put it on.
Yeah, it's all up on my website, jessecleg.com.
Well, that's even all right. Just go to jessecleg.com. Save us the trouble. So again, copy and paste. Go to jessecleg.com and you can go and see the guy performing all over the place. I want to play Let It Burn just now. George Meany's here. Stick around, Jesse. We don't need to chase you out of the studio. George is here for an update on motoring and all things cars. George, the CEO of Auto Trader in South Africa and the host of Auto Central, which is every Monday. You can listen to it live or you can download the podcast. How are you, George? What's happening?
Good and you, Gareth?
Good.
Yeah, I'm honored to meet Jesse.
Yeah.
How's it going, man?
All right, and you?
Very good.
Good, good.
He's a hell of a songwriter.
I've heard.
Yeah, if you've heard one or two songs, you'll know what I'm talking about, right? Okay, George, so what's in your news today?
Well, 200 tons of plastic road will be laid in the stretch of the N3 in KwaZulu-Natal soon.
Ooh, plastic road.
Plastic
everyone's bottles
road.
And straws.
Yeah, so it's recycled plastic. And what they're going to do is they're going to test this under the harsh South African sun.
Right.
The plastic is going to replace the bitumen.
Yes,
in the tar.
Like.
Which
a bitch.
We don't like.
Oh.
So this is good.
Gets all over the
because
place.
First of all the eco warriors out there who are posting fake pictures of the Amazon burning can calm their tits and drive on a plastic road and feel that they're making some kind of contribution, just like they do when they put their paper straw, into my drink so that it disintegrates while I'm trying to have it.
Mm.
All right.
How long does it take these paper straws to disintegrate anyway?
About 5 seconds.
Yes. In Diet Coke. About
I mean, I don't use straws.
And then what started as a clear apple juice ends up as a milkshake.
What I can't understand is when you're at home and you take a glass out of the cupboard and you pour yourself a drink, do you take out a freaking straw?
Have you tried the smoothies that I love so much? You can't drink those from the cup.
Oh, okay.
You'll have a smoothie moustache in a second.
please, lumps of it will fall onto your eyes. It'll be a disaster.
Happens on a regular basis.
Are you into this plastic straw crap? Jesse, do you care about
that? Yeah, I am, actually.
Oh, here we go. See, we've awoken the eco warrior.
Well, I don't know. You know, I think that...
I'm with quiet you. I have a glass
straw. I think that if there's small things we can do that'll help, then, you know, I mean... Do you need a straw?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, otherwise you get clumps
what about
in your
those?
Eyes.
What about those metal straws?
Yeah, I've got a glass smoothie straw.
Yeah, you get those glass straws. I don't really use. I'm not going to be buying glass straws. I'm not going to carry straws around. I'd rather just not use a straw.
Okay. All right.
Fine. I'm not like fighting for it or like you all know right. campaigning for it. But
you've publicly shamed me into doing this stuff. So thanks a lot.
I do recycle though at home.
Will you drive on George's plastic road that he's talking about?
I will.
Make you
I will.
Feel better?
Yes, it actually will.
Okay. There we go. All right.
Not a bad initiative. And,
not bad at all.
And then there's a new ride-hailing service for woman by woman called Chauffe Her.
Oh.
Okay.
Like tease hers.
No, not like tease hers at all.
Oh, different to that. You can get a Chauffe Her from tease hers.
But this is obviously for women who've been nervous and
yes.
have had bad experiences, and we've heard about these.
Yeah, we have.
There are rare occasions. Thank God they're rare, but there are occasions where most of these Lyft services, these Ubers, you know, Lyft, the rest of them, that they aren't taxify. They sometimes, like any business, there's going to be a creep or a weirdo. And for some women, this ends up in very unpleasant experiences, if not a lot worse. So obviously, in this case, I'm imagining women drivers.
Women drivers.
Only.
Only.
Women, okay.
SOS button. And it's all for women to feel safer.
Right. Mm.
And exactly to your point. So, you know, hopefully they give Uber and Taxify a go. I'm all for the competition. So.
Sure.
Yeah.
Drive down prices as well.
Yeah.
That's especially in South Africa, though, with all the women problems.
Yeah, horrible.
I mean, I'm not going to name their names, but the ride-hailing services in South Africa's cars have deteriorated.
Listen, the drivers are quite crap. Eh?
Yeah, in Cape Town, I won't touch a ride-hailing service.
Really?
No. I've almost been, or literally, almost died twice.
Almost died.
Well, yeah. I mean, I'm busy. I'm
over.
Being a bit dramatic, but the
it's
one
like
day
Jesse with his paper straws
on the way from the airport in Cape Town to the city centre, in traffic, and I hear the screeching of tires. Wasn't the driver's fault, so I can't blame the ride-hailing service. But nonetheless, a screeching 4x4 double cab comes past the window. On two wheels, crashes into the car about three cars in.
Oh,
the
my word.
So I don't know if you can solve that, and it's
not
the ride-hailing service.
Fault.
Yeah.
Well,
but what would you have done if you were at the wheel?
Pulled off the road.
But I can attest to what he's saying, because in Cape Town, it's the only time I've had issues with a service like that, where we ended up on an island on the highway.
Yeah, and I don't feel safe in those cars.
He almost missed the off-ramp, and then he decided to try and take
it. Don't you think these two are real drama queens, Jesse? Have you ever heard such bitching in your life? Really?
I mean, none of that has anything to do with the actual Uber drivers.
No,
thank you.
But I've got other stories inside Cape Town where, you know, narrowly missing pedestrians.
Yeah. It is hit or miss, literally.
Exactly. Let me just interrupt quickly. Cindy, who says, I love Jesse's music. Thanks for getting him back in, Gareth. Sending lots of love from Ireland. She loves you.
Oh, thank you. From Ireland.
All the way from Ireland.
Very nice.
Awesome stuff. And then there is news of a new cannabis test, because police have been battling to test whether you're under the influence. You know, with alcohol, you've got the breathalyzer test. So how do you test for cannabis in the moment?
I usually just look at how glazed over
the eyes are. You're under the influence. With the urine test, it tests whether you've consumed cannabis in a month. So you can't really use the urine test as a under the influence test.
How much? I'm going to ask a controversial question here. How much testing have they done to determine just how badly people drive under the influence of cannabis and or alcohol? Have they compared the two? Have they done a control? Because we assume that all of these substances are bad for good reason, you know, because people's attention isn't great and their ability to react is slow and all of that kind of thing. But I want to know whether someone who's driving under the influence of, let's say, drug A is compared to someone who's driving under the influence of drug B or no drugs. And there aren't enough surveys, to my mind, that have gone to the trouble of comparing apples with apples.
I'll volunteer.
Well, I think
you're right, but I don't think there's any doubt that any substance that causes hallucinogenic effects should put the person behind the wheel.
What about substances that, I've always said, the biggest threat on our roads that we never research is tiredness.
Yeah, no, so that's, well, again.
How many people fall asleep behind the wheel? Truck drivers, we hear about these horrendous accidents that you assume could only have happened because the guy fell asleep at the wheel.
Yeah.
And no one pulls you over on the side of the road and the police take out an instrument of some kind
and test you.
Shove it up your ass and say, I'm sorry, sir, you can't drive anymore, you're tired.
Well, I suppose you're not trying to justify the drugs. What you're trying to say is that one of them is worse, and that's tiredness.
Yeah, but there's a range of things that are potentially quite bad.
Texting and driving is bad.
Texting and driving is terrible. And what about people who are angry? Like, you know how
road
angry
rage.
Drivers, they brake very suddenly. I know, because I've done this. You brake suddenly, you drive with like this
purpose.
Vengeful force.
Try and overtake
everyone. Take corners fast. And, you know, if people are angry, I think that also is as bad as
perhaps, you're having a bad day.
No, that's true. So this test is a saliva test and can be conducted on the side of the road.
Yes, that's because
it tests your drool, cannabis levels.
The drool actually falls under the side of the road if you're that, that stoned.
Stoned, you're drooling.
I'm not
a cannabis fan at all, but the few times that I have had it, sometimes it's been so bad I haven't even been able to find the car door, never mind drive.
Yeah. There's got to be something we figure out. Technology is developing so quickly. There'll be some instrument that says to you, sorry, you're too tired, or sorry, you're too high, or sorry, you're too drunk, or sorry, you're a douchebag, and sorry, you're too stupid to drive.
Yeah.
maybe the new electric cars will scan you when you get in. Yeah.
I mean, what about stupid while we're talking about this? Because seriously.
No, some people have undiagnosed stupidity.
Yeah. And you see, I said this the other day on Monday. I was driving in and I saw a taxi that had overturned. All right. And this is now potentially 15, maybe even 20 people's lives in huge peril. Some of them may have been injured in that accident. I didn't see anyone who was dead, thank goodness. But I mean, I drove past. I'm not one of those rubberneckers. But I thought about it and it came to my mind that if you're a taxi driver, you shouldn't just be competent to drive. You should be more competent than the average driver. If I'm just driving in my car and I bump into something and there are no other cars involved, it's only me that can get into trouble or get hurt. And that's my responsibility. But if you're driving a whole lot of other people, you need to be extra responsible. Yeah. It's like a truck driver's license needs to be more advanced than anyone else's.
They can drive over stuff.
Right, and those guys are driving with like 30, 40 people in the car.
Correct.
As well. I mean, like it's so overloaded.
I think that's absolutely right.
So, again, we've got to have a lot more tests. People get uptight about guns for good reason. We should get very uptight about driver's licenses.
I think you're right. I mean, it should be like an aircraft license. Every 3 years, I have to retake the test, be tested by an instructor. And I get more experience all the time, so why do I need to be retested? Why? Because maybe I can become dumb overnight.
No,
do stupid things.
You could bump your head. And
well, I mean, the one of the theories in the aircraft world is that the more experience you get, the dumber things you do because you're more confident.
Mm.
Like,
You start flying low. You forget. Yeah. So
you're not nervous enough to be putting in.
Exactly.
It's like a musician.
I remember we spoke about this, and I said, so what you should look for is a nervous. Hope that the plane that you're on has a nervous-looking pilot.
Yeah.
Nervous, but Jesse, you get nervous before you perform.
Yeah, yeah.
Not like you're shaking in your nose.
Yeah, you get like adrenaline, you know.
You don't want to let the audience down.
Yeah. I think that you know, no matter how many times you do it, you always have that sort of rush
thing.
Before
overconfidence is going to stuff up.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. It's you can't be too relaxed.
Well, talking about stuff ups, this Porsche, it was a 1939 Porsche Type 64.
It's very cool looking car.
Very cool looking car. Never touched. Was in brand spanking new condition, obviously aged naturally, but was hardly driven. Went on auction.
Yeah, how much?
For a reserve price of $20 million. And if you go watch the YouTube video on this, the auctioneer started off the bidding at $13 million, but the guy had a foreign accent, so people thought he said $30 million.
I heard about this. He's a Dutch guy.
Yes, and he went up to $14 million, and they thought it was $40 million, and so the bids went up to $70 million.
Wow!
And eventually, the auctioneer realized that the person putting the numbers up on the screen wasn't putting up the numbers that he was saying, and then corrected himself, and suddenly all the numbers plummeted from the screen, and the car never sold.
Sure. Well, they'll just do that one
again.
Yeah,
they'll have to put it in the next
but
lot.
This is a very bad ad for multiculturalism, really.
Yeah.
True.
But also, how stupid were the people bidding $70 million for a car that was worth 17?
Well, the guys that were bidding were arguing that they actually heard what the auctioneer was saying and that it was 17. And the reserve price was 20, so nobody got the car in the end. And then just for Gareth, a German taxi startup called Volocopter has finally raised $55 million to fund a round led by Geely, the Chinese parent company of Volvo, to try and get this Volocopter up in the air within 3 years.
Thank you, Jesus. Mm. When do we get it, and how many months do I have to wait? How much do I have to pay?
3 years, not sure of the price yet. Oh,
so someone has to fly it, right?
You fly it.
So what is it? Is it like a jetpack?
No, it's a like a drone.
Okay.
And it's got multiple rotors on it. And
It's a taxi.
Yeah.
Vertical takeoff
that's
and lift.
That's crazy. So it's like a drone that you just get into.
Is it
manned or unmanned?
Well, they say that these will eventually become unmanned. Maybe they will launch unmanned.
Jeez, no thanks.
You don't like
getting
that?
Into an unmanned drone and flying around Joburg.
I will. I'd say for up. Say, dude,
please,
slow
we've
down.
Just been talking about how mad everyone on the roads are. It's much safer up there. Way safer.
Maybe.
I'm up for it. Plus, imagine you get to your appointment on time every time. You wake up like 10 minutes late, not a problem.
Or dead.
Yeah, I'll let the AI advance a little bit more before we all go flying around in unmanned drones.
You guys are a bunch of pussies.
This is the second prototype. It has 18 rotors and features a flight time of 30 minutes and a maximum range of 27 kilometers.
No, that's no good.
Yeah, it is no good. It flies at 110 kilometers per hour and capable of roughly 35
k's.
But I mean, 35 k's is short. Between here and any of our houses is less than 35 k's.
Mm. Yeah, about there. Yeah. I don't want to run out of fuel up there. That's a problem. Yeah. You know, if you grind to a halt in your car, you can always go get a Coke bottle full of petrol.
So this is the second round of funding at $55 million. To date, they've raised $94 million to try and get this thing.
Well,
in
I'll throw in $100.
Yeah.
All right. You want it that badly, but you'll give it $100.
Yeah, I don't have a whole lot more right now. Okay, thank you, George.
You're welcome.
A look at what's going on the motoring front. Thank you, Jesse. It's always good to catch up with you.
Thank you for having me, man. It's great to be back.
Yeah, nice to see you. And we're going to play Let It Burn, let people hear it if they haven't heard it already, and go out and see his shows. He's coming here to do a whole bunch of shows, November and December.
Yeah, jessecleck.com. All the dates are there.
Fantastic. Have a good weekend, everybody. Be good, and if you're not, take photos.
This is CliffCentral.com.